Welcome to the ITAD Talk podcast and part two in this series.
So you were one of the founders of the Robert Francis Group 25 years ago. Can you share with us a little history of the company and what you have been facilitating for the last 7 years?
Sure. Yeah. Robert Francis Group was founded to really look at the executive side of the issue, what keeps IT executives awake at night. So we were created as a business advisory firm to IT executives, doing analyst work only. And we then started moving into consulting in the 2000s, doing both. And we've done that for our clients, providing research, general research, and specific custom research for our clients. One of our largest sections that we work with is the financial services sector. And we've done a number of projects for them through the years. And in 2014, six of the top banks came to us. And these were ones with revenue greater than $100 billion, and they all are global institutions. And they had decided that they wanted to move to the cloud finally, and they wanted some help in doing so. They had four objectives that they were trying to do. They wanted to have a first-of-a-kind approach to get there rather than everybody pick a direction, and they would end up with a morass of different solutions across the board, as they do with everything else. Second thing they wanted to do is they wanted to develop a common taxonomy so everybody worked with the same thing. Third, they did not want to get locked into a cloud operating system. At that time, nobody knew what it meant, but they've already been through that once with getting locked into mainframes and then Unix solutions and then Intel solutions. And they didn't want to get locked into cloud solutions and any one provider. And the last thing they didn't want to do was to increase their security and compliance costs. Each of these firms was already spending in excess of $1 billion, with a B, dollars a year on security and compliance. Wow. In fact, if you looked at JP Morgan, they had committed previous to this to fix what was the London whale problem in trading, where someone had gone rogue, and they were going to add an extra $1.5 billion per year to their security and compliance costs. Wow. So these firms are spending a fortune, and their fear was, if I go to the cloud, God only knows what that means, right? And so they did not want to expose themselves, and that was a big thing that they wanted to work on. So starting in 2014, in the spring of 2014, we got together with them. We did bi-weekly video conferences and facilitated those, and quarterly full-day face-to-face summit, working through all of that. And we actually we continued face-to-face summits all the way through to March of last year. On March 9th, we held our last one, and fortunately for us, we picked a Monday, because by March 10th, everybody would have stayed home. That was the last physical day to get people together. But interestingly, by 2018, all the goals, those four objectives that I spoke about, really were not exactly met. In fact, the lines of business chose to operate differently than corporate, right? Corporate had this vision strategy of how to do things. The line of business folks were really sitting there saying, to us, the most important was the speed to market. So in so doing, they ended up selecting a platform and taking advantage of the tools unique to the platform. As a result, they ended up with Application Affinity. The applications dragged along the data, so they had data gravity along with the Application Affinity. And different application groups, different lines of businesses and application groups chose different platforms. So now we had different security, compliance, and consistencies. If you look at most of the large enterprises, the financial institutions in particular, They've got at least two or three infrastructure players, right? They have Amazon and AWS, and in most cases, and additionally, Google Cloud Platform and maybe others. And then they've got SaaS providers as well, but at least four of those out there. And in some cases, they themselves are SaaS providers. So there's a large number of cloud providers that they're working with and lock in many different ways across the board for applications and security and compliance problems. So it's very different from where they started. And as a result, we still have problems that we're addressing. So we're still continuing the conversation.
So do you think it would have gone better if they would have kind of gone with corporate's view, or do you think that that would have hurt the lines of business?
So the lines of business are all driven towards trying to satisfy their customer executive needs. What's interesting is it was a learning exercise. Nobody knew what was best. Corporate has their strategies as always. Lines of business have different marching orders. They met the line of business needs. However, when you think about it from a financial institution standpoint and many other very large enterprises, the amount of applications that have gone to the cloud represent less than 10% of their application set. So we still have the majority of the business critical and mission critical material all sitting on legacy systems somewhere.
So does that mean they're still running all their data centers then, that a lot of that the infrastructure has yet to move to the cloud?
So when you say all their data centers, starting in 2000, there was a decision by many executives to consolidate data centers and to reduce their data center costs. So all their data centers has been meaning over time a smaller and smaller number of data centers. So they've been shrinking them, bringing applications together, eliminating duplication, just like the IBM story I told you earlier. The companies have been doing it. They have been eliminating and trying to net out the number of applications they need to do the work that they're doing. So that's all shrinking. At the same time, starting in the late 2000s and 2010 time period, the Cloud First initiative started kicking in. In the financial institutions in the 2015 time period, and they were all now trying to figure out what they can get to the cloud. Still, the biggest challenge is for every institution is there's amount of data that they consider crown jewels, and there are concerns about moving it to the cloud. They constantly see the breaking in the news and the challenges that occur because they've been to the cloud. And so there's a lot of concern with that. Not that there aren't problems behind their own walls and their own firewalls, but companies in most cases feel far more secure knowing that they're sitting with their own data in their vault than in somebody else's.
Right.
And so a lot of that stuff hasn't moved yet, and they're still trying to figure it out. So now what you see, the change has been from let's move everything to a public cloud to let's selectively decide where something best resides. A public cloud, and if so, which one? SaaS provider, if so, which one? Is it a private cloud, and what does it belong on and where? Right? Does it go into our own data center? Does it go into a colo? How do we do all of this? So right now we've evolved from this big single movement that says everything looks alike and there's one of a kind answer to a recognition of segregation into the various elements and decisioning that's occurring based upon what the application is, what the data is, and where people feel most comfortable about placing it and who they want to work with to make it happen.
Great. Well, thanks for explaining that a little bit better. One of the major stories going on today is the COP26, where governments and companies are coming together to discuss achieving net zero carbon emissions globally in the 2050-2060 timeframe. And I understand RFG is embarking on a carbon neutral data center initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, happy to. You know, COP26, I guess, is new in process. And the companies and the countries are making all these commitments for 2050 that they want to be carbon neutral, whatever that means. But the fact of the matter is there's no meat behind the bones. There are no plans, there are no targets. And yet in 2015, they were all asked to lay a plan out for 2030, right, as a first milestone to get to 2050. And that really hasn't been done. We've done initial look at this, and we recognize that there is a value, a very strong business case for energy efficiency, water conservation in the data centers. So we want to take a look at the path to carbon neutral data centers and look at 2030 as the milestone that we want to deal with. 2021, 2022 is definitely proving to be an inflection point in the cost for carbon offsets, power and water usage, which will be aggravated because of the data center inefficiencies, which today are still true. So it's time now for organizations to begin a path to data center sustainability and to start setting their targets for 2030. As it turns out, if you think about it, if you're running a data center, you've got at best three turns before you can achieve your 2030 targets, because as you know, if somebody is agreeing to an upgrade of equipment, it doesn't all get installed in 1 year. They do it over a three-year period normally, so for most firms. And so if you start now, you've got at best three turns. If you're building a brand new site, you probably only have one turn, because you've got to go acquire that land, get it through P&Z, do the building, and load that equipment into that data center. So now is actually the time people have to start looking to the path to 2030, and we're going to do that. The interesting thing, I don't know, are you familiar with PUE?
Yeah, you had mentioned that when we had first talked a little bit, but please explain it to our listeners.
So PUE stands for Power Usage Effectiveness, and most companies aren't very good at that. What it really represents is the total power, the total facility power, right? All the electricity consumed by the data center facility, including all the heating and cooling, divided by the energy consumed by the IT equipment itself. Okay? So when you take that number, that's always going to be a number today anyway, equal or greater than one, right? If there's no added power and cooling used in the data center, that number would equal one. Today, the average is sitting around 1.58, and that number has barely moved from 2012. So it's really interesting, because way back when we started looking at this in 2004 to 2012, we made major gains in the equipment that was being used. Companies finally recognized they had to conserve power, so they started doing that. Ships became less heat intensive, and many other things happened. So we made huge gains over that time period in many companies. However, some companies still are far greater than 1.8 and even go up to 3.0, which really means, when you think about it, for every dollar spent on powering IT equipment, there's $2 spent in heating and cooling to support that IT equipment. Very, very inefficient equipment.
So now, in those particular cases, is that because of the age, the technology, or possibly those places are like in the Middle East where it's really hot or something? Or why would it be so inefficient?
So there are a lot of things you can do. It's part of its equipment. Part of its layout of the building and design of the building, layout and design of the aisles that you do. If you don't think about energy efficiency and wastewater efficiency up front, you get to be very wasteful. So we have seen in the olden days in many places and still that they did not have hot and cold aisles. People took hot air off of one machine, you blew it into another machine, which made them run even hotter.
Wow.
And so it's not just the equipment. There's real data center design that goes into all of this to make people efficient and drive it down. And it matters on what you're using. And of course, in some cases, companies have applications that haven't been updated and they run on old equipment and people are stuck with it. So there are things that need to be done to deal with it. But when you think about it, on the other end of the scale, you have these hyperscalers like Google and Microsoft. They've been able to get their PUEs down to under 1.1. And in some cases, almost close to zero extra. I think Google has a data center somewhere in the world that's around 1.04. So almost no added cost. So there are ways to do it. So it's not all future technology. There's a lot of existing stuff that people can take advantage of if they want to do that. So we want to start a study next year to go address that, to get people to understand the state of the art and then the state of the possible of what they can really do. And we want to not only look at all of that, but they have to think about recapture, recycling hardware as well. How do you do everything and do the waste management of east water? If you do it correctly, we can help save the planet, so to speak, with all of this stuff.
Well, that's great. It's definitely a good goal, and it sounds like they need more guardrails on it to be able to reach those timelines from what you're saying.
Thanks again for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe anywhere you listen.